demand equality. We demand justice. The revolution will not be televised. Action speaks louder than words, and we got that action. Let's go.
I want my freedom, my justice, my future filled with substance. Want my freedom, my justice, my future filled with substance. Bump you, bump you, bump him and her too. Bump you, bump you, bump him and her too.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the No Justice, No Peace podcast with Racial Justice Now director, H.A. Jabbar. And yes, that is me. Welcome to the podcast where we got our new subject this week, intersections of the school-to-prison pipeline, behavioral threat assessments, and data analytics. It is a new era, I'm told, a new era called the big data era, a time where data or the collection of data is more valuable than a barrel of oil. So as we travel through space and time, trying to get some understanding of this new big data era, we're bringing to you a special guest all the way from Minnesota. Marika Pfefferkorn is from the Twin Cities Innovation Alliance and the Coalition to Stop the Cradle to Prison Algorithm. Let me say that again. The Coalition to Stop the Cradle to Prison Algorithm. Marika Pfefferkorn is an interdisciplinary and cross-sector thought leader. She's a change agent working to transform systems and improve outcomes for youth and communities of color across education, technology, and economic growth in vitality. She works through policy, research, and practice to end school pushout at a federal, state, and local level, most recently focusing on the cradle-to-prison algorithm, an emerging technological trend in education and juvenile justice, equating the next iteration and expansion of the school-to-prison pipeline. Marika combines the work of community organizing and advocacy to facilitate community-centered solutions that reflect the interests of youth, families, and communities of color and marginalized communities. Most recently, she's organized to dissolve a problematic joint powers agreement around big data, predictive analytics, and algorithms in Minnesota. She has presented at the Data for Black Lives Conference at MIT, which is Massachusetts Institute for Technology, and also at the Free Minds, Free People Conference. She has numerous upcoming presentations, including at Michigan Tech Lecture Series and also at the Center for Democracy and Technology. So friends and family, let's welcome to the podcast, Marika Pfefferkorn.
Thank you so much, Hashem. It is a pleasure to be here and to be able to talk with you about this work.
Well, you know, we had to catch you. You were in New Orleans, you were in Minnesota, you were in Massachusetts, you know, you headed somewhere else. I appreciate you taking this short break. You've been clocking a lot of airline miles there.
Absolutely. But y'all are my people. So you, I would do it for.
No doubt.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. And so tonight we will be live and in color here in the DMV district of Columbia or D.C., Maryland, and Virginia for the Dignity in Schools campaign, Week of Action, National Week of Action with the Dignity in Schools campaign to end the school-to-prison pipeline and to stop school push-out. We're very excited. This is an event that happens every year and that Racial Justice Now has been a part of for the last 7 years. And so we're extremely excited to host Marika Pfefferkorn. But before we actually get into the meat and potatoes, we might say, which is the big data era, let's back up and get a little history, Marika, and fill us in about your career, you might say, or your biography of the education justice work that led you up to today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this, Hashem. Literally, this work is very personal for me. So the beginning of this journey was when I was in school. This is a multi-generational story. So when I was in school, I was a pretty good student. I was engaged in my education, but that was not the case for my brother. And he literally was my first introduction to the school-to-prison pipeline because he entered it at a very early age. He always struggled with school, but he was not diagnosed with dyslexia until like eighth grade. So as you can imagine, when students aren't able to read, they're not able to engage with the text, they may act out to disguise that they have this challenge. And so because of that, my brother literally was pushed out into the prison system and has impacted our family since that time. And it's impacting me right now with my friends and family members who are still experiencing that same type of push out. So for me, that's why I knew I had to be in education. At first, it was about trying to be in education so that I could be that face and that person that could support Black and Brown and Indigenous children so that they could see themselves reflected in the work. So I worked directly in the public schools, teaching in the classroom, doing parent and community engagement, and realized that I was not able to.
What state are you talking about?
This is Minnesota. I moved to Minnesota for college, and that's where my education career kind of blossomed. So I worked in the schools for about 10 years and realized that as one of the few people of color on the team, that everybody was always coming to me to address all of the needs of our students. And I was like, if you are always coming to me, that means you're not being responsible for what's happening with your kids. And so I had to take a step away from being directly in the system to a place at the University of Minnesota where I felt like I could train educators and youth development professionals to be in stronger relationships with students, to create a foundation of humanity with students before, you know, the problems would arise. And from there, my career has taken a number of different directions. I've worked in college and career readiness. I worked in Black male achievement. I worked in out of school time. And most recently, I really worked on addressing discipline disparities. I was the co-chair of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, where we worked to put a moratorium on kindergarten through third grade suspensions in the Minneapolis public schools. We've been pushing state legislative agenda around the Student Inclusion and Engagement Act, and most recently launched the Midwest Center for School Transformation and the Twin Cities Innovation Alliance, because we understood that in addition to the work that was happening around academics, that technology was taking a central role in education, and our people and our community were not engaged in this emergence of technology being a driver of decisions, being a driver of resources, being a driver of how students are actually getting support and programs are getting funding. So that's where we ended up. And that was about 2 years ago. And that's also when in the St. Paul and Ramsey County, where they tried to put through a joint powers agreement and create a whole new governing entity around big data, predictive analytics, and algorithms.
So we've been allies around this Dignity in School campaign to end school push out and the school to prison pipeline for a number of years. Share with us this work and your experience and what's going on with this National Week of Action with the Dignity in Schools campaign. You're also on the coordinating committee, if I'm not incorrect. Can you put all that together for us?
For the last 4.5 years, I've been on the Dignity in Schools campaign coordinating committee and been working to ensure that grassroots programs and organizations are having the tools, resources, and support necessary to advance policy change, improve practice. And so specifically for this Week of Action, we're actually celebrating our 10th year for the Week of Action. And so in the Twin Cities, what we were doing is we had a state of dismissals listening session for our community. We partnered with the Penumbra Theater, which is a Black repertory theater in St. Paul. They had a play called Pipeline that was about the school to prison pipeline. And we had our young people speaking on panels for that. We also did a mural with a local muralist, Winston Allen. And we partnered with El Colegio, which is a school that supports Latino students, many of them undocumented. And we were able to create a mural around Educate Students, Stop Arrests right outside their school. So we've been very busy trying to promote and advocate for the changes we would like to see to make sure that our schools are the places where children want to be.
Powerful. So tell us how you started out or you got into this big data situation, or how this revelation came to you, this new body of knowledge.
This big data, predictive analytics and algorithms is bridging over from the juvenile justice system. And so many of our local people that are advocates in juvenile justice had raised the red flag, and they came to talk to one of our Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition meetings, and that they mentioned that the school district, the county, and the city were going to be using suspensions as an indicator in risk assessments to assign a risk score to students about their potential to be involved with the juvenile justice system. And so when they told me that they were going to be using suspensions as an indicator, I said, well, that's got to be absolutely flawed. And it's certainly going to be biased towards our students of color, because in the state of Minnesota, last year, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights identified 43 school districts for discriminating on out-of-school suspensions for Black and brown children. So that's 43 school districts. And one of those school districts is St. Paul. So if St. Paul Schools is going to be using their suspension data to identify whether a student is at risk for involvement with the juvenile justice system, that information most likely is flawed, because the suspensions were made in a subjective manner. And so you don't see our white students getting the same type of out-of-school suspensions. And so they wouldn't even be flagged for this risk assessment. So really, to me, it felt like if you're using this as the indicator, you're literally baking bias into this algorithm that you're creating. And so there's no way that our students would not be negatively impacted by this.
For our listeners, Marika, give us you said this subjective, what was the word you used, subjective in regards to these indicators and how they are coming to this conclusion. But you said it was biased because it's subjective. Give us an example of what you mean by subjective.
Okay, so you might have a white student that is in a classroom and they are chewing gum. They might be talking with a friend in the classroom, or they may be talking back to the teacher. And that white student often is given multiple opportunities to do a redirect. They often describe white children when they're doing that as just being precocious. But when you see our Black, brown, and indigenous students, they might be doing very similar behaviors, but it's perceived very differently from the teachers. And in Minnesota, we have predominantly white women as our teachers. And so their interactions with our Black, brown, and indigenous students is very different. And so they have less tolerance for anything that's happening with our children. So they are sent out of the classroom much more quickly. And so the subjectiveness is, it could be the same behavior, but construed in a different way. And the response could be very different. And more times than not, it's an overly harsh and punitive deficit-based approach to our children. And the white students are, again, seen as, this is developmentally appropriate. We expect them to push back in these ways. But again, it's just seen through a very different lens, but it has very strong consequences for our young people in communities of color.
So you come to the term big data era. Is that right?
This is the era of big data. You know, we're seeing a tsunami of technological infrastructure that is becoming commonplace in schools. And big data really is this collection of all these different sources of information, these data points. So they're gathering all of this information, tons of it. Amounts of that information, to me personally, feels like you do not need to have all this information about this. This is a violation of my privacy or our children's privacy or our family's privacy. But with this big data, it's around collecting all this information. So the first thing that comes up with is, who is collecting it? For what purpose? What are they doing with it once they collect it? How is it being analyzed? Are we sure it's safe? And is there a potential for it to be sold? So just in the big data category alone, there's a lot of stuff that we need to grapple with. But then they put another layer on that, and they're trying to integrate and apply predictive analytics. And predictive analytics basically is data analytics where you create an algorithm that is going to predict an outcome based on past behavior.
Oh boy, we just getting into some real big language right here. Now we're going MIT and all of these other. Let's talk to the person. What are we talking about? An algorithm. What does that mean exactly?
Basically, an algorithm is a recipe where you have all these ingredients in place. 1 + 1 = 2. And so basically an algorithm is a recipe or a pattern that they look at historic behaviors or situations and say, because this happened, this is going to happen. And in an algorithm, most of the time, we don't actually know what that recipe is. It's a data scientist or a coder behind the scenes that makes a determination about how this recipe will determine success or failure. Oftentimes, that person is not a person in education. Like I said, they're academic. They are a data scientist. And so they're supposed to create a formula that tells us who's more likely to do something. Did that break it down, or do you need me to go even further?
Let's go even further.
So I'll give you an example. You have an algorithm that would say, this student has a high number of absences at school. They also have a family member who was involved or incarcerated in the criminal justice system. And they would put all those factors together and say, because all of these things, these ingredients to the recipe, we believe that this person is more likely than the next to have an outcome that is negative and that will land you in the criminal justice system.
And at that point, what is done with that algorithm? What is done with that information once they come to that conclusion?
So in our circumstance, what they were talking about doing is creating a score, a risk score for our children. So they would put all of these different indicators or ingredients, as we like to say, into this algorithm. And it would put out a score of a 5 for a student. And a 5 would be like really bad. It's really troublesome. Or you might get a 1. So for example, let me tell you a story to kind of break this down. When we were working in community, we were talking with young people about what is an algorithm and what is big data and predictive analytics. And we were talking with them over the course of the evening, not quite sure if they understood, like you said, these are pretty technical terms. The next day, that student went to school. She was sitting in a class and looking around her classroom, and she said, well, based on how I know the teacher interacts with us, I know that student would probably be scored a 5, which would be bad. That student over there, they would be scored maybe a 3, or that one's a 1. And then the student paused and said, well, I wonder what they would score me as, because if they took me right now, I'd probably be a lower number. I'm to school on time. I go to my classes. I'm doing all right with my grades. But if they looked at my information a year ago, we were experiencing housing crisis. We had housing instability. I missed a lot of school. There was a lot going on. And so if they took that snapshot in time and just used that information, that student said that they thought they probably would have been rated a 5, which is a high risk for involvement in the juvenile justice system. And the student herself, in her own words, she said, my past cannot predict my future. I am the one that gets to make the choices about what's ahead for me. And so that really struck me that this is not a complex concept. It's like you said, it's how we talk about it. This young person understood that someone was trying to label them, to stigmatize them because of one little small snapshot of their life. And so that's really what's so problematic about algorithms is if you don't understand the historical context, if you don't have a full picture, and you're just using this data without the story of who this person is, you have an incomplete picture and your outcome or your scenario of what you want to do with it might be completely different from what that student needs. And so, again, this was just a really big issue for us in the community. another issue for us around these predictive analytics or even the collection of this big data is that we have a lot of American Indian families in Minnesota. And in particular, our indigenous students have an agreement with the state and with the Department of Education around Indian education. And so decisions that are made around indigenous students, there has to be a process in place to get approval with the tribal government. And so a lot of questions were raised, like, how would they even have the permission to collect this kind of data from us without us even knowing it or agreeing to it? So a lot of the issue is there's this lack of transparency about the data that's being collected and how it's being used and who has permission to access it. And what I will tell you in the state of Minnesota, that community members are structurally excluded from accessing most of this information. So nobody knows what's happening behind this big screen. And a lot of decisions are being made based on that information.
And that's what I see as very historically problematic, especially, the COINTEL program is what comes to mind. And it's very Hoover-esque, if that's a term, right?
Yes.
Yes,
it's a term now.
About all this surveilling and sabotage and what have you. So I see it being very dangerous. But for our listeners, let's connect this now, the big data era, to the behavioral threat assessments. And so how did that come up in your community?
So at the same time that our county and our city and our school district in St. Paul were trying to advance this joint powers agreement, at the state level, our legislators were trying to push through legislation that would have every school district have a threat assessment team. And so at the same time that you have like this heavy surveillance, this predictive analytics, they're also talking about behavioral threat assessments in response to the mass shootings that are happening and across the country in the schools. And so what they were proposing to do was have these teams made up of law enforcement, psychologists, and other school staff that would be looking again at this big data around students and determining if they were a behavioral risk for a mass shooting. So what's problematic about that is that the information that they wanted to collect, again, is very subjective information, and it depends on who is interpreting what is a threat. Because in Minnesota, many of our educators believe our Black children are threats, and they don't have to do anything to get that label. The threat assessment, again, for us was problematic because it's giving more information to law enforcement. It's surveilling our kids. Potentially, they could be monitoring their social media, collecting all that data, and making determinations about if a child is a threat or not. And I don't know if you're familiar with the history of Minnesota and threat assessments, but we were at the forefront when, after 9/11, they had the idea to approach countering violent extremism. Are you familiar with CVE?
I'm not, but I am familiar that you have a large Somali population there.
Yes. So after 9/11, they decided that they needed to collect a lot of data on our Muslim and Somali and other students because they were concerned that, you know, another 9/11 might happen or that they might be going over to work with ISIS. And so they started collecting information about Muslim students and making a determination if they were a threat. So this is nothing new. This is something that has been emerging in our community for the last 20 years. And so it started there, and now it's spread from just Muslim community and populations to full scale, all students. But what we believe with these threat assessments is there again is the potential and risk for this bias, because the information that they're looking at and the lens that they're examining that information through is often very flawed.
Well, you heard it here first on the No Justice, No Peace podcast with Marika Pfefferkorn from the Twin City Coalition, a powerful coalition to end not just the school-to-prison pipeline, but the school-to-prison, what do they call it, Marika? The algorithm.
Cradle-to-prison algorithm. And let me just say that that name, the cradle-to-prison algorithm, we had to find something big enough to encapsulate what is happening now, because literally they are collecting information before our children are born and creating a profile that will follow them for a lifetime. And so literally that is the cradle to prison algorithm, where a formula can determine that you are headed directly for prison or jail.
So the level of state policing is taking a new technological advance. So this is a very dangerous situation. We're here in Maryland, and we watched the school safety and security budget be quadrupled. And so we know that there are a lot of vendors and a lot of sellers of all kinds of materials that are, you know, licking their chops, seeing that they can benefit from this increased budget for weapons and the like.
And what's really interesting about that is, like, in Minnesota, we looked at the trends. So there is a decrease in students being involved in the juvenile justice system. We have less students that are getting involved. And yet at the same time, there's a reduction in the students. The budgets are expanding enormously. And so why is this investment happening when we've actually seen reform that is working? So this is countering decades of work to try to reform the juvenile justice system. It's contrary to the direction that we were trying to take. And the evidence suggests that we were being very successful in reducing those numbers, but they're back at it again.
Thank you for joining us, Marika. We're wishing you safe travels and look forward to seeing you soon and very soon.
Soon and very soon, Hashem. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you.
Well, that was a powerful interview with Marika Pfefferkorn from the Twin Cities Innovation Alliance and the Midwest Center for School Transformation. You can learn more about this emerging trend at rjndmv.org. That's rjndmv.org. We want to thank our sponsors, Racial Justice Now, for their hard work and dedication in ending the school to prison pipeline. This is the No Justice, No Peace podcast. I'm H.A. Jabbar, and we look forward to you tuning in next week. Wishing you peace and blessings.
I'm a yelling with my fist up in the air. I love my dark skin and my nappy hair. Bump you. Crooked politicians, see them everywhere. Bump you. Bump 45, we know that he don't care. Bump you. To the system, cause y'all never treat us equal. Bump you. Dirty cops, why y'all killing all my people? Bump you. All the lies and the history they teach you. Bump you. A black mind is a weapon and it's lethal. Bump you. If you don't like it, cause this is the revolution. Bump you. I can take a knee, it's in the Constitution. Bump you. Mount Rushmore was sculpted by the Klan. Bump you. With my fist up, I'm screaming, bump the man. I want my freedom, my justice, my future filled with substance. Want my freedom, my justice, my future filled with substance. Bump you, bump him and her too. Bump you, bump him and her too. I want my freedom, my justice, my future filled with substance. Want my freedom, my justice, my future filled with substance. Bump you, bump him and her too.